This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 1205. It's time for the Tuesday edition of the Noon Business Hour, and great to have you with us. I'm Cisco Cotto.
I'm Chris Kreidel. AccuWeather says we'll get near 55 for a high this afternoon. Mostly cloudy skies. Currently 49 degrees at O'Hare.
The Noon Business Hour is presented by Old Second Bank. Let's kick things off with an update of Wall Street at Bloomberg. Here's Elisa Parenti.
Cisco and Chris, the Dow is higher by 188 points, or 0.75%, but the NASDAQ is in the red, down 18, S&P up 10, the Bloomberg WBBM Chicago Index higher by 0.25%. Housing prices are keeping their steady march higher here in 2018. The latest measure from S&P Case-Shiller CoreLogic shows a 6.2% increase in median U.S. home prices in January compared to a year earlier. Our rate of increase here in the Chicago area was a little less than that, nearer to 2.5%. For the first time this year, the mood of consumers cooled a bit this month. While it remains near an 18-year high, consumer confidence, as measured by the Conference Board, unexpectedly dipped to a few ticks below 128, down from a revised 130 in February. Economists surveyed by Bloomberg have been forecasting a small rise. Measures of both current conditions and expectations dropped. Back to you, Cisco and Chris.
On the Noon Business Hour today, we're going to be talking about the new information on housing costs and the economy. And Apple unveils its new education theme here in Chicago.
Travel Tuesday, we'll hear from a former member of the CIA on some ways to stay safe when traveling. And it turns out millennials are saving, just not by putting money in stocks. We'll get into all of that and loads more on today's Noon Business Hour.
Discussing your dollars, the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Apple is using a Chicago high school as the setting for its latest product launch, and we will get lunch too, probably. We'll get details in our next segment. Reports on home prices and consumer confidence are leading today's data, and we are joined by Bob Bruska, chief economist at Fact and Opinion Economics in New York. Bob, welcome back to the Noon Business Hour.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
What have we learned about the housing market and about American consumption with some of these numbers?
Well, house prices are still running up at a really good pace. They're growing faster than incomes. They're growing faster than wages. Of course, we want to watch this carefully because we're getting to the period now where we've had some of these tax law changes. And also, we're getting into the period where mortgage rates are starting to rise. And we expect both of those will take a bite out of home prices because you can't deduct your state and local taxes anymore. It's going to make a house a little bit less attractive thing for people to own. And because mortgage rates are going up, it's going to make houses a little more expensive for people to buy. So I think in the next several months, we're going to want to watch home price trends a little bit more closely.
We keep hearing that, there are not enough homes on the market.
Well, yeah, I know I hear that. And I understand that in terms of the days of supply, that's true. And like I said, the prices are still going up. So prices would still sort of indicate that there's some element of scarcity because prices are going up faster than incomes are. But we're going to have to wait and see what happens. It's always the price relative to the cost. And the cost of home ownership are going to be going up. And, of course, home prices have gotten to be pretty high now. And as mortgage rates go up, they're going to make it much more harder, much more difficult for people to be able to afford them. And so maybe that will bring supply and demand into balance. Maybe it's not that we need more supply. Maybe it's that we're going to have less demand.
Do mortgage rates have to climb significantly to begin making it more difficult for people to have homes? I'm wondering if there's just a perception issue, too, as mortgage rates climb, that it seems like immediately it's more expensive.
Yeah, well, the perception is the first day you buy the house, you go home and you have to write that check and you look at your disposable income and you look at what you have to pay for your house. And right away you realize it's an issue. So, no, I think that it becomes an issue pretty quickly, and it's and people are able to figure this out. But of course, some people are going to be, you know, filling out, you know, a short form because of the change in the tax laws. If they do that, there wouldn't be any deductibility issue anyway. And of course, it's always been that way. There've always been some people who bought homes and those incomes weren't high enough to make sense for them to itemize. So, you know, when you look at the nuts and bolts of it, it's actually gets to be kind of a complicated thing to figure out. But the points that I made about affordability, about mortgage rates, and about the change in tax laws are all there in the background, and they all should act to cause house prices to slow their gains.
Consumer confidence declining in March. What do you make of that, Bob?
Well, it's still pretty high, and it's a one-month back off. And for most of these series, you know, you want to wait and see if there's some sort of trend. But there are some things going on that are disturbing. Now, the Federal Reserve continues to raise interest rates. And, you know, while they're still low, based on history, based on where the inflation rate is, it's also true that if you look at money supply growth has been slowing down. If you look at money supply growth in real terms, you know, real balances, the growth in real money balances has been slowing down. And, in fact, it's even negative over 3 months and 6 months. And in fact, those same trends are there globally. They're there for Europe and for Japan. And I wonder if central banks have kind of taken their eye off the ball. They keep telling us the economy is doing well. You know, the new Atlanta Fed GDP Now forecast, which tracks GDP in the current quarter, is getting to be quite a weak number. And the Fed is still looking ahead, and they still think their interest rates need to go to normal, which is someplace over 3.5%. And I'm concerned that there's a slowdown in money supply growth that may be telling us something about what's really going on with the economy. I'm not sure that these tax cuts are going to bring all that momentum to us or not. Again, that becomes a complicated question. You know, a lot of the tax cuts favor the rich. The rich already have a lot of money. And for a lot of them, it will just wind up being saved. It won't wind up being spent. That will reduce the multiplier. That is the expansive effect on the economy. So, you know, I'm trying to look at all of these indicators, and I'm not as encouraged as the Fed is that the economy is in such great shape for it to continue to raise rates the way it's been doing.
All right, we're going to be checking back with you. Bob Bruska is chief economist, Fact and Opinion Economics in New York. Coming up, Apple comes to Chicago to renew an emphasis on education.
Discussing the news affecting your money. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Apple executives traveled all the way from Silicon Valley to Lane Tech College Prep here in Chicago this morning, unveiling new products related to education. Let's find out what the company's come up with. We welcome Mark Gurman, consumer technology reporter at Bloomberg, based in San Francisco. Mark, thanks for joining us. So the unveiling's already happened. What did we find out?
Yeah, thanks for having me. It is a cloudy day here in Chicago. I'm right outside Lane Tech High School. Apple introduced an update to last year's cheaper iPad. This one is $300 for education uses for students and teachers through Apple's Education Store, $330 for everyone else. The main pair of upgrades here are a faster processor, the A10 Fusion processor that was first released in 2016 with the iPhone 7, as well as support for the Apple Pencil, which the iPad Pro got in 2015. So basically bringing some of the older, higher-end features down the line to this cheaper iPad for students. Also some new software for education, teachers and students, a new service called Schoolwork that allows teachers to manage their students. An update to the classroom application for administering iPads is now compatible with the Mac. Both of those releases are coming in June. There's also a few new tools for using the Apple Pencil stylus on the iPad. And other than that, this is a big focus on education. Not much else today.
Anything there it's designed for, say, individual parents to buy things for their kids, or are they really looking at schools and school districts investing here?
Yeah, they're looking at bulk school purchases and bulk management of iPads. But again, these are the same exact iPads that are available on the online store and the Apple retail store. It's just being spun as an education focus, given the newfound competition from Google and Microsoft, specifically the Google Chrome OS Chromebooks, which have 59% market share according to Q3 2017 data versus only 17% Mac and iPad and iPhone combined on the Apple side.
We're told that Google is increasing its presence in American schools. So is this a way to kind of fight against that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the more significant moments on stage is when one of the Apple executives called the new iPad virtually faster than any Chromebook. And so if you're thinking Apple's not going after the Chromebooks, this is the response to that.
And you mentioned that this is sort of all about those bulk purchases. These are things that it seems like schools can use these in a variety of ways. In the classroom, they can even let the students take them home. I mean, Apple really wanted to solidify themselves in this way.
Yeah, there's some examples of using these for homework. Sort of makes me feel like I always actually did my homework, so I'm not going to say I never did my homework, but maybe this could be a little bit more motivation for students to do their homework, given, you know, the touchscreen and then getting the camera and everything through there, being able to do your work on the iPad, but also submit it through the iPad versus the process that I know I used to have to go through with printing things, turning it in, forgetting it to bring it to the teacher after the class day is over. Just sort of, it checks a lot of boxes here for students.
Good memories, huh, Mark?
Yeah.
Talk about the event being here in Chicago. Does Apple do this very often? Seems like whenever we see these announcements, they're right there near home.
Yeah, this is only the second time in recent history where Apple's held an event outside of California. They've sort of scattered around California in recent years. They've done some in San Francisco, some in San Jose, some elsewhere. This one is here in Chicago. Like you said, the last education event was actually in New York City about 6 years ago in 2012. So this is a new thing for them. Is there anything really Chicago-specific to this event? Nope, not at all. But this is one really cool school.
It's the San Francisco weather, though, we're noticing. We provided some of that for you here today.
Yeah, Mark, no, thank you. We appreciate it.
Mark, we appreciate you joining with us for a few minutes here on the Noon Business Hour. Mark Gurman is consumer technology reporter for Bloomberg in San Francisco. Still ahead on this Travel Tuesday, a former CIA agent reveals his tips for safe travel. From Vivian News Time 12:25, let's get the latest on the markets now. Here's Elisa Peretti.
Chris, the Dow now higher by 162 points or 0.2%. We're at 24,359. NASDAQ lower by 30 points or 0.4%. S&P up 7 or 0.25%. And the Wintrust WBBM Chicago Index from Bloomberg is gaining 0.1%. Crude oil futures little changed, off 0.2% at $65.41 a barrel. As for the grains, we turn to Pete Manhart. He's at Bates Commodities in Normal. Pete?
We've had mixed prices here today ahead of Thursday's USDA stocks and acreage report. Corn's been up 2 to down 1 at the moment. December corn down a half at 396 and a quarter. Beans have been up 5.5 to down 3. November's at the moment down 2 at 1023 and 1/2. And wheat's been up 3.5 to down 5.5. We have July wheat down 4 and 1/2 at 467. And this is Pete Manhart with Bates Commodities in Normal.
Thank you, Pete. With business at 25 and 55, live from Bloomberg, Elisa Parenti, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
WBBM News Time, 12:30. Good afternoon. I'm Cisco Cotto.
And I'm Chris Kreidel. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM.
Stocks are mixed. We'll see what's affecting the markets.
Travel Tuesday, tips for staying safe while you're away from home. Tips from a former agent for the CIA.
Millennials are saving their money, but they could be doing a better job of helping it grow.
Apple comes to Chicago to unveil products tied to education.
A Michigan State University dean who oversaw a clinic where former sports doctor Larry Nassar worked is facing criminal charges for his own behavior.
On Wall Street, the Dow up 156 points, the NASDAQ down 37, S&P 500 up by 6.
Clouds in Chicagoland throughout your day. Temps a little warmer than yesterday. Highs in the mid-50s later this afternoon. Right now, 49 at O'Hare, 50 at Midway, 48 along Chicago's lakefront. The Noon Business Hour is presented by Old Second Bank.
Mixed returns on Wall Street at this hour. We're joined by Michael Palumbo, founder of Third Millennium Trading and author of the book Calculated Risk. Here in Chicago, welcome back to the Noon Business Hour. Michael, what are you thinking about the markets these days?
Well, good afternoon, Chris and Cisco. Thanks for having me on. We've had a lot of volatility in the last couple of months. In February, March, it's been much, much crazier than we've seen for a couple of years. But if you look at the grand scheme of things, if you look at where the S&P is right now, it's sitting at 2665. That's basically unchanged on the year. It's hard to believe, given some of the swings we've had. But really, the market is unchanged. So if you look at it that way, we really are still just stuck in the mud here.
What would be the calculated risk in this equation?
That's a great question. I do think that the first quarter earnings, which are going to be coming out next month, will be the catalyst to a move out of this range we've been in. And I do think that the odds say that move would be up, but you know, and that depends on how the earnings come in. And there are some question marks. The big question mark is, will profit margins remain as high as they've been? They've been at record levels for many years now. And now there's talk about, you know, increasing minimum wages in states and maybe even nationally, certainly in some of the states, even talk here in Illinois. And that will definitely affect company profit margins somewhat. And it'll be interesting to see in the first quarter if any of that really comes through in their numbers. I doubt that they will. That's why I think we do have somewhat of a relief rally next month as the earnings come in and investors can see that things are still pretty good.
Is there a way that, especially as the year goes along, that tax reform may end up blunting some of those increased costs, maybe still lead to some good profits?
Well, net tax reform is going to be good for companies. Some companies have been hiding, or not hiding, but they've been leaving a lot of their funds offshore because they refuse to pay the high U.S. corporate tax rates. Now that the rates are coming down, the thought is they're going to pay them and they're going to repatriate a lot of these earnings. So I think that will be a net positive, but that's already in the market. The market already understands what's going on with tax reform. What it doesn't really quite have its arms around is how wage increases, which have been slowly kind of creeping in here, and I think that's a good thing overall. Let me just say it's good for the middle class. But for corporations, a lot of times what's good for the middle class is not necessarily good for profits. So it'll be interesting to see whether the wage increases that are coming in finally, which is a good sign for the middle class, whether that will affect corporate profits.
Is it, and maybe this just depends on the sector, is it good, those wage increases, as long as the people getting them are spending that money?
Well, yeah, in certain sectors. So, you know, you're taking away from some sectors and giving to others like retail. So, yes, I think that net it is. And I think the market is probably overreacting a little bit to the downside. And that's why, again, I think we do have a little bit of a relief rally coming once the market gets comfortable with where wage increases are going to be and what corporate profits are going to be affected by this. And like you had said, yes, it can be a positive, and especially considering that generally wage increases go to the people exactly that are going to spend it for the most part. So I think that it will be good. It's just that one thing we have to understand is that you cannot have a universally high minimum wage because the country is too diverse. So that minimum wage has to be increased a much larger amount in cities that can handle it, like New York, Chicago. They've done it in Seattle, L.A., but you can't do that. You can't have a $15 minimum wage downstate Illinois. I mean, that's just not going to work. And so that's the issue we have here, is that the minimum wage increase is good, but it can't be just across the board. The United States is too diverse.
A lot of the minimum wages, as I recall, were also announced by the company. They were a one-time deal.
Yeah, some companies have just gone to getting proactive themselves and gotten ahead of the curve here and just announced it, including Starbucks and some others. And that's great. They know, but you know, when they announce that means they know that they can handle it, the companies themselves. But you know, what government wants to do is government wants to force it on companies. And you know what? In some areas, that'll work. Like I said, in big cities, they have the income to be able to pay these workers higher wages. But you can't do this across the board in the United States, not at $15 anyway. But even in Illinois, there's talk about it being $15 if Pritzker gets elected. I don't want to get political, but I would just say in that case, that would be very difficult because our state is so diverse. That would work in Chicago, but you try that in Dixon, Illinois, I don't think it works. But you know, that's my opinion.
Quickly, Mike, one stock, GE, just interested in your general thoughts. It's just been hammered, and now today it's up 6%.
You know what? GE has been very volatile. As you said, it has been hurt badly because basically their numbers have been terrible. And they're completely renovating the company and selling off a lot of assets. And I think it's dead money for right now, meaning I would stay away from GE just because there's a lot of news both sides that – you know, could add to some more negativity in the stock price in the short term. But, you know, I just think that there are better investments out there. There are a lot of companies that are growing and doing well, and GE has got probably another year to 2 years to figure itself out and what it really is good at. The problem with GE is it just got too diverse, and it got into businesses it does not know how to run, and now they're backing out of it. It's going to take a while. If you have a long-term view, go ahead, step in. But short-term, the stock is going to be probably dead money for a while.
It's up 6% right now at $13.68. Michael, thanks for joining us. Michael Palumbo, founder of Third Millennium Trading, author of the book Calculated Risk here in Chicago. Ahead, Travel Tuesday, a former member of the CIA shares what he's learned about safe travel.
Money Talks, as the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It is Travel Tuesday here on the Noon Business Hour, and this afternoon the focus is on staying safe when you take a trip. We welcome Matt Bradley, Regional Security Director of the Americas at International SOS, based in Philadelphia. Matt, welcome to the Noon Business Hour. Thanks for joining us. One of the first tips is about the profile that you have. Do you make it very clear that you're an American and that you're traveling and that you're not from around there, or do you kind of lay low?
Very good point. Thanks for having me today. And, of course, you want to keep a low profile. People will know that you're a tourist and perhaps that you're not from there, but what you want to do is make sure, act like you've been there before, right? So move around like you know that you've been there before, and just don't draw attention to yourself.
How much do you have to look into the area that you're going to? I guess just do your homework before you get there.
Well, if you think about when you travel for business or for pleasure, you always plan ahead. You plan your activities. And really, planning for safety is the same thing. You don't want to go to a place without knowing what the risks are and how you can avoid them.
How do you find that out?
You can do it from websites. You can get information from the State Department. Of course, our company has information about that for our customers. But there are a lot of good websites. Most governments provide information about different countries and the risks that you might face when you go there.
What would you always take with you to protect you?
That's a good question. I always say a doorstop, and people ask, why would you do that? But when you get into the hotel room in the night and you know that you're there for the rest of the evening, you just put that doorstop under the door to keep people from opening your door, forcing your door open. I've heard a lot of different stories about people who had criminals break into their hotel room in the middle of the night.
Now, when you think about it, it makes total sense, and certainly that would be good advice for the CIA. What do you say to people who are simply afraid of being afraid when they're on their trip? You know, they wouldn't want to prepare like that because they don't want to think about someone barging into the room.
Well, I always feel more comfortable whenever I am prepared, and I think that is, you know, the more that we prepare, the better our trip will be. So I would encourage people to travel. I travel myself. I always want to explain to people that it's okay to travel. We don't discourage it. In fact, a proper planning helps you be a better traveler and to enjoy it more. So I would just say that thinking about something helps you to have more confidence, not to make you afraid.
Do you keep in touch with people back home or people at the hotel, just so people know where you're traveling, if you're taking an excursion or going out for dinner or something, so they can keep tabs on you if you don't come back at a right time?
Yeah, that's a good point, especially if you're traveling alone. It's very important that somebody know where you are and what you plan to do during that day. Of course, it's important for people to know the hotel where you're going and how to get in touch with them. But also, if you're going to take any excursions or deviate from your itineraries, you can just send a quick text message or an email back to somebody letting them know what you're doing for that day. If there's somebody else who's with you, then you want to make sure that you know how you're going to get back in touch with them if you should get separated.
All right, some good practical ideas here. Thanks so much for joining us today. Matt Bradley is Regional Security Director of the Americas at International SOS in Philadelphia. And join us at this time tomorrow for Personal Finance Wednesday. Still to come, getting younger Americans to consider the value of the stock market.
Your daily transaction for useful information. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It appears the millennial generation is doing a pretty good job of saving money, but it could use some help investing money. We welcome Mark Horner, wealth advisor at Fairhaven Wealth Management and editor of MillionDollarCupOfCoffee.com in Oak Brook. Welcome back to the Noon Business Hour. Mark, how do we know about the investing habits of the millennial generation at this point?
Yeah, there have been a number of surveys recently, Chris, about how millennials are doing, and there is good news that they're generally, and they do tend to be a little bit of a punching bag for people, so they deserve a little bit of a break here. They're getting started saving meaningfully earlier than my generation. So a recent survey, according to Transamerica, said that the average millennial started saving for their retirement at age 24 versus Generation X of age 30. But there's two steps towards getting ready for retirement: getting started saving and then making sure your investments are appropriately allocated. And that's the side that they could use a little bit of help on.
All right, from whom?
Well, that's a bit of a challenge for everybody out there. I mean, we've talked about this a lot, about just the lack of information out there for people getting started in personal finance, and that includes investing. So that's something that we're certainly trying to help clients understand. And so some perspective for any millennial or anyone actually investing right now should make sure that they understand are the long-term odds of making money in the stock market. So over rolling 10-year periods, the stock market, you've made money 95% of the time. Over rolling 20-year periods, going back to 1926, you've made money in the stock market 100% of the time. So that means for somebody saving for retirement that's got 30 or 40 years to go, they just shouldn't be shaken off investing in the stock market by media headlines that they might see, or the very real experience that they might have gone through or watched their parents go through in 2008.
Yeah, that's actually, it was my question on 2008. Is it a matter of getting people to understand, hey, 2008, it was rough, but in some respects, now you can look back on it as a blip in that we're way higher now than we were even before the 08 crash?
Yeah, so I think that's true, Cisco. And there is some reality that 2008 was a very difficult time to go through. But markets like that have happened twice in the last hundred years, the Great Depression and then the Great Recession of 2008. And again, an important statistic, invested in the stock market in January 2007 through 2017. So that's a 10-year period that includes that very difficult period of 2008. You returned on average 8% in the stock market versus sitting in a money market account where you were essentially flat with a 0% return. So having that long-term perspective with the help of this data that supports investing for the long term in the stock market, I think is very important.
Good insight. Where you save matters. Thank you, Mark Horner, wealth advisor at Fairhaven Wealth Management, editor of MillionDollarCupOfCoffee.com. I'll look at the markets from Bloomberg next. WBBM News Time, 12:55, wrapping up the noon business hour with a check of Wall Street sponsored by Baird. At Bloomberg, here's Elisa Parenti.
Well, Cisco, the market is swinging south now. The Dow is up just 20 points or less than a tenth of a percent, and the Nasdaq's losses are growing, down 76 points now to 71.44, a loss of more than 1%. And the S&P is in the red by 8 points, down almost a third of a percent. The Wintrust WBBM Chicago Index from Bloomberg has turned lower by 0.25%. Tech stocks have been a drag today after a report that the Trump administration is considering a crackdown on Chinese investments in areas the U.S. considers sensitive. Yesterday, GE was the only losing Dow stock, but today shares are higher by almost 6% on market talk that Warren Buffett might buy a stake in the company. No confirmation from him, but an analyst at William Blair notes Buffett has said he might be interested in GE if the price were right. With Business at 25 and 55 and live from Bloomberg, I'm Elisa Parenti, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
WBBM and HD Chicago, WCFS-FM and HD1 Elmwood Park, Chicago.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.